everybody. Just exactly as the title said, it's 500 Fever. That indicates that the Indy 500 will be running again come Memorial Day, the 30th of May, and a lot of you out there perhaps have what we call 500 Fever. As a matter of fact, so many people have been crowding into the Indy the past couple of years that some closed-circuit television has cropped up across the country. Let's face it, it's a little bit tough if you live in, Walla Walla, Washington, perhaps, to make it over to the Indy. So what they've done is set up the closed-circuit TV. We even have it, I think, coming up here in Rockford. I'd like to introduce a young man who works at TV 23, sitting on my left and your right, Larry Neuzel. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
And you are actually the reason for this program today, because you are what they call, in many circles, sort of a racing nut.
Right.
And you've got all of the collections and all of the dope on the Indy. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you went to college.
I went to college at Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois.
That's racing country down there.
Yeah, yes.
Especially with the midgets.
Right.
And what brought on this 500 Fever of yours, this drive to collect models and build models and autographs and what have you of all of these fine racing people?
Well, I think it started a long time ago when my folks took me to the midget races back in the late 40s and early 50s. We kind of followed them, and it seemed like we went about every week. And as I grew up, these drivers kind of advanced, and they would drive big cars and in the Indianapolis. And I would collect their pictures and articles from the scrapbooks, and I just kind of kept up with them. I bought one model, and it turned out pretty good, and I was real satisfied with it. And I just kept collecting more and more, and I have about 60 of these type of cars.
Well, in other words, what actually started perhaps as a youngster's hobby, right, has turned into a grown man's fetish. And now, as you say, some of these models that you have, and we'll show some of these a little bit later, I might just ask you, when you take a model such as we are going to show, this isn't something you just slop together either. How much time would go into something like that?
Well, some of these I've spent anywhere from 2 hours to 8 hours on one model.
That's quite a bit of time.
The time passes by real fast, like 2 hours seems like about 15 minutes.
Oh, but your wife just loves it when you get in one of these model building moods of yours. Well, let's see, you've collected pictures and autographs and so on and so forth. Did I mention where you work here at the station?
No.
I don't think I did. Larry is in the film department here at Channel 23. He's the fellow who puts our films together for Chuck Faber and myself for our Scope News and Sports. And when film comes in, this definitely gives you a chance to preview it first, Larry. And I suppose you have been able to pick out some clips of racing over the years that perhaps are in your private collection right now.
Yes, I have approximately 25 to 30 minutes that I've just kind of collected and gone through the back files of a film and got a few pieces here and there.
Well, as long as you have the film clips, Larry, why don't we take a look right now and take a look at just one small strip of film that you have collected.
This is just there's a slide of one of the cars. These cars hit anywhere from 135 to right now they can go up to 200 miles per hour.
Is this down at Indy that we're watching now?
Yes, all this will be from Indianapolis.
These are time trials primarily then?
Time trials and the weeks preceding the time trials. This is Eddie Sachs in 1961 attempting for his qualification.
Is Eddie running this year?
No, he was killed in 1964.
That's right, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah. I believe that in this particular year, Eddie won the pole position, which put him on the inside of the front row. This is Don Branson, the qualified second fastest. He made the middle of the first row.
Well, how fast are these fellas going approximately there on these?
They average, right now they average about 165, 67. This is Troy Ruttman, the 1962 Indianapolis winner. This is John Zink special.
Have you seen pictures this year of the new turbine car?
Yes.
You think it has much of a chance?
Well, it looked like it handled real well. I hate to see it do too good because I like the roar of the engines, and the turbine, it kind of whistles.
I know a lot of the drivers have said so far that they've almost conceded the race, although the turbine didn't get the best time in the time trials.
I guess he was having some trouble on the straightaways, and he just wanted to make sure that he could get into the race and could possibly be a contender.
Well, it will be. It's just like the old timers. We were looking a little earlier at some of the models. And I didn't know, and maybe some of the folks didn't know, that in the early days there were a driver and a mechanic. Is that right?
That's right.
And what did he do? What happened? The mechanic jump out in case of trouble right there on a track and fix it as best he could?
More or less, yes. They ran out of gas, so he could run across and get some more gas, go back, and they can continue.
Well, things have certainly improved at the 500 since that time. Let's take a look. How do you put these models together, Lair, when you're building a model?
Well, they come in pieces, as you see here. Anywhere from 60 to 100 pieces.
That's a lot of car to build, I'll tell you.
This particular model is Jimmy Clark's 1966 model, and the one we see here is his 1965 winning car.
That's the pieces, that's actually his, is that it?
Right, this is his car all torn down. The two long things on the side there are the gas tanks. Mm-hmm. And the rear engine cars, the driver is actually surrounded by gasoline.
I was going to say, how much gas offhand does a car, let's just take a car, Jimmy Clark's car, how much gas do they carry per trip?
That I'm not sure, something like 20, 22 gallon, I believe. And I believe in the last few years they've made it mandatory that they have to have at least two pit stops.
They make at least two pit stops, huh?
This is to fill up on gas.
Well, why don't we sort of take a pit stop right here? We'll be back with more on 500 Fever right after this message. Thank you. Let's get back to 500 Fever. Larry Neuzel, why don't you explain some of the models that we have in front of us here and tell us a little bit about each one, if you will, please.
Well, this is a conventional Curtis Craft 500 Roadster with a engine in the front. This is one of the first type of models that I bought. When I started, I made up my own designs. I usually use the numbers from the actual cars, but as to the color, all I had to begin with was just newspaper clippings. I then bought a racing pictorial, which now they have in color the cars, and I could more or less get the color of the car plus the number.
In other words, on your racing books that we're looking at now, stories of the drivers and their automobiles and what they've gone through into building them and so on and so forth.
That's right. These Indianapolis 500 yearbooks are very complete. They have a detailed description of the race, the days preceding to the race, starting with the opening day ceremonies and everything.
Oh, these are right from the Indy, huh?
Right.
Did you get these down there, Lair, or were these purchased for you by somebody and you collected them?
No, I purchased them myself.
I see. Okay, now there's car number 35. What would that one be?
This is a Jim Murphy's car, I believe, 1922 model.
What kind of speeds did they ever get out of that?
Oh, about 80, 90 miles an hour, something like that.
Far cry from today's high-powered
yes, quite a bit.
Here's one with the double driver that I was talking about.
Right, this
number
is
23.
Lewis Snyder, the winning car in 1931. He had a mechanic with him. Next to that is Kelly Petillo, 1935 winner. And next is Wilbur Shaw's winning Maserati that he raced in 1939 and 1940. I might say that Wilbur Shaw was the only driver to have won two Indianapolis 500s in a row, and only one of three drivers to ever win the Indianapolis three times.
Yeah, Maury Rose was
right,
the other.
And Lewis Meyer was the other. Next, we have Bill Vukovich's car that he won in 1953, and 1954 car was very similar to this. Then the next car, number four, there is a Blue Hopkins Special. This is a car he was attempting to drive and qualify in 1955. In fact, I believe he won the pole position. We have a little bit of film on that.
On Vukovich?
Yes, here we see him in 1955.
There's car number four, just as you called it.
He was trying to be the first driver to win three consecutive 500s in a row. As the race began, this is just the starting lap here, was Jack McGrath on the inside. And the pace was pretty fast and hot and heavy, you might say. And then all of a sudden, on one of the turns, Roger Ward was coming out. He lost control of it. And piling in and trying to avoid the crash was Johnny Boyd and Al Keller, and closely followed behind was Bill Vukovich. He had nowhere to go, so he sailed over one car, over the guardrail, and this is his car. Needless to say, he died almost instantly.
Tragedy on on the raceway. Of course, we just had a tragedy with a great driver, Lorenz Bandini from Italy, in the Monaco just a few weeks ago. What kind of a man, Larry, does it take to be a race driver and to put him behind the wheel of something so powerful as this?
Well, it takes a very courageous man, one who likes thrill and speed. This is Bob Schweikert, the 1955 winner. And we have a model of his car, the John Zink special here.
Which one is that?
That's the number six.
Number six, this baby right here. These are very nice models, complete to windbreaker and steering wheel, plastic wheels. Very well done. You do a nice job on those.
Thank you. About this time, I started collecting pictures and scrapbooks. This is a picture from the 1958 race. The car you see sideways there flying over is Pat O'Connor. He was killed. And the car on the bottom picture going over the top is Jerry Unser, who was later killed at Indianapolis in the time trials.
Who we got here?
This is, I believe, Jim McElreath. This is a midget car.
Mm-hmm. And look at the position that baby is in, will you?
Even though it looks pretty bad, he came out with pretty minor injuries, really.
That's due to, I suppose, to the safety features. Do these cars, they don't have roll bars?
Yes, now they do.
Do they now?
Yes, right.
And of course, shoulder harness and
right.
Seat belt.
Mm-hmm. This is, I believe, Alan Crowe. And again,
Is that him at the bottom?
Right, that's his head down there at the white.
Boy.
Again, he was lucky and he came out.
I guess you have to be lucky to be a driver, don't you?
This is Roger Ward, and this is a sprint car. You can see that the other cars that I have are the Indianapolis type, and this is a sprint car used on dirt tracks,
mm-hmm.
or the championship cars, they're called. This, again, is another spectacular flip.
So some great shots here. You must have a fabulous scrapbook.
Well, I have six scrapbooks and almost ready to start on my seventh. This is Roger McCluskey, and again, he was mighty lucky, and he came out with, I believe, a broken arm and a few scratches. These are the modern stock cars.
This is what we were talking about earlier,
right.
The cars that run out here at Rockford Speedway, then.
Yes, mm-hmm.
These babies can get out and move, too.
Yes, they...
No
they,
doubt about that.
They travel pretty fast. And those speeds, it's mighty quick on the trigger. This is Johnny White. He was a rookie several years back.
Yeah.
And this one put him out of action. I think he came out with a broken arm, plus several other injuries, which made him eligible to no longer drive.
There are, evidently, there is a regular code of the road, then. You
mm-hmm.
have to be in top physical shape.
Right.
To
now,
be
this picture is taken at Illinois at the Springfield race, and... I happen to have my 8mm movie camera at this time, and I caught this car in the action as he's flipping like this.
Mm.
This driver is Bill Horstmeyer, and he died that same day.
Who's that? Is that him in the foreground? He hadn't been thrown.
That's
a spectator.
Right, that's a spectator. This is from my book I call my obituary book. It's almost filled, and it's just drivers that have gotten killed. This is the oldest picture I have of Rex Mays being thrown from his car. As you see, he didn't have a safety belt,
uh-huh.
and he didn't have roll bars, so he got thrown out rather easily. The two cars hit him, and he died. I believe this was about 1949.
In other words, it wasn't maybe the fall. It was being in the way of the oncoming automobiles.
And this is Tony Bettenhausen. Tony was my favorite driver, and I have quite a few autographs, but somehow he was a hard luck driver and was out pretty early in the race, and by the time I'd get down there, he was usually gone.
Mm-hmm.
We have some... film of Tony. This is 1961. He was attempting to work on or try out a car for his good friend Paul Russo. I guess Paul was having some difficulty, and so he had Tony try it out and see if he could find out what was the matter. This is a tragic day for many race fans, especially me.
Happened there, Larry?
Well, a 15-cent bolt dropped out, and when he applied his brakes, it threw him right into the wall.
Look at that gas pouring out of there. Fantastic film, fantastic shots.
This is the car that Tony drove in 1956, right?
Well, let me ask you a question here now. We've been talking about all kinds of cars here, and these were all front-engine cars, were they not?
Yes, right.
Well, then, what was the invention of the rear-engine car?
Well, about 1961, Jim Kimberly sponsored a car, and it was the Cooper Climax driven by Jack Brabham. We have some film of that, just a short clip to show.
This is the rear engine.
Right. And this more or less revolutionized the 500 after this car placed ninth. Mm-hmm. It did real well, and a lot of people thought, well, this is a pretty good deal. We'll go ahead and try it. So from there on, the rear engine car has done real well.
I read somewhere over the UPI wire the other day, I think only... it didn't give the percentage, but it did say something about there's only one or two really front-engine cars still trying to run this year.
Right, I believe they're both entered by Jim Hurtubise.
Well, he's been pretty successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything is rear-engine, and then, of course, now they're worried about this turbine car coming along and wiping the whole slate clean. Where, after the invention of the rear-engine car, what was the next step?
Well, it was the turbine, I believe. I believe in that same year they... had a turbine, but it wasn't too successful, so it really never came around too well.
What about some of these drivers like A.J. Foyt and some of these fellas?
Well, in 1961, A.J. and Eddie Sachs were having a pretty good duel, and I believe we have a film clip of an accident that happened during that race.
With A.J. Foyt?
No, not with A.J. This happened with A.J. Shepard and Jack Turner. This car we saw there was... Jim Hurtubise. This is the accident here.
Well, they always lose that tire. Look at that baby go.
Number 45, there was Jack Turner, and I believe he's had several accidents, so he decided to give it up and just retire.
While he still had his health.
Right.
Can't blame him at all.
This is A.J. Shepard's car.
Fantastic. And so many of these fellas, they put thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into these automobiles, go down there for the time trials, and bam, careen off the wall, and while a driver many times and fortunately gets out safely, all of that money and mm-hmm. all of those hopes are just completely shot, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, that's right. Cars we saw there were A.J. and Eddie Sachs. This is a rear tire of Eddie Sachs. He was leading and with only about three laps to go, and decided he better come in and make a tire change and be sure to get second place. This is the checker flag given to A.J. Foyt.
He wanted to make sure that he was going to finish the race one piece.
There's quite a bit of money involved there between second place and 15th place.
What is the average on first place? What do some of these fellows make, $150,000?
Something like that, $117,000, $118,000.
While we're focusing on some of the models, and we'll hold on that just for a second, I think one of the most interesting things to me about the 500, and I'm sure to many other people, Larry, will be when these fellas come into the pit and they have this pressurized gas. How long does it take them to fill up a tank like that?
Well, I don't know exactly how long to put the gas in, but to fill up a tank with gas, put on four tires, they can do anywhere from 17 to 30 seconds.
Can you imagine that? 17 to 30 seconds. Now, some of you women who have trouble on the highway changing a tire waiting for a man, you might think about that just a little bit. 17 seconds to change four tires and fill it up. Let's take a look now, Larry, at some of the models that you have. You built these, I presume,
yes,
also.
Yes, right. These are more or less standard models. Now, I've painted them up to you. This is A.J. Foyt's 1961 winner. And next to A.J., we have Roger Ward's 1962 winning car. And next, we have Dan Gurney, 1963. Next to him, we have Jimmy Clark's 1963 winning car. Or not winning car, but second place car. And this is Parnelli Jones' 1963 winning car. And next to Parnelli, we have Bobby Marshman. And I believe we have a film clip of Bobby Marshman.
Is this in time trials?
Well, this is prior to the... time trials. This is the week. He hit it an unofficial speed of 160.1 miles per hour.
That's not bad.
This is the speed that he hit, but the speed that he qualified for in the middle of the front row was about 157 miles per hour.
That pole position is pretty important to these fellas, isn't it? At least not have to fight your way through that 33-man traffic.
Right, and I think a lot of it is prestige, too. being
psychological
fast,
point, though? Congratulations all the way around. I don't blame you. Well, next to Bobby's car here, who's next?
I believe this is A.J. Foyt's winning car in 1964. Next to him, we have Bud Tingelstad in a rear-engine car.
He pulled a Coupe de Grasse yesterday, I guess, and took out one of the fellas, didn't he?
Yes.
He qualified by knocking out one of the fellow by the name of Rodriguez, a Mexican driver who had qualified the week before.
Yes. Now, this is Bud Tingelstad, and next to Bud, we have Dan Gurney's 1965 car. Then next we have Johnny Rutherford and Parnelli Jones, A.J. Foyt, and this is A.J. Foyt's car. And next we have Jimmy Clark, I believe, in his 1966 or 1965 car. This is the car in which he won, and this is also the one that I had broken down in the picture.
Oh, that's the one that you had the...
And then next to his 65 car, we have his 1966 car. This is the one in which he placed second.
Both of those look quite a bit alike, and yet they're... Well, I guess maybe there isn't too much modification that would go on, huh?
No, not too much.
Well, let's take a little pit stop here at 500 Fever. We'll be back in just 60 seconds. Larry, Graham Hill, of course, from England, won last year's race. Tell me a little bit about that race in 1966.
Well, it was a rather confused race all the way from the beginning to the end.
By confused, you mean what?
Well, we have some pictures here of the first crash at the opening of the race. Here we have, at the drop of the flag, two drivers started to go in the same position, and when they saw each other, well, one pulled out and slammed against the wall. And Mel Kenyon, trying to avoid this...
There goes a tire.
Right. Mel Kenyon, trying to avoid this, slid, and this is the result.
Look at those boys duck behind that retaining wall,
right,
too, huh?
I think we have a comment from some of the drivers about what they saw and what they felt.
I almost made it past the mess. Some fella alongside of the guy in front of me hit him, knocked him into the wall. He climbed up partially on the wall and then came down and drove over top of me. And by that time, my car had been hit by a few other cars, and I think I climbed over a couple of them, and it's a mess. A year's work down the drain.
I just said to myself, this can't be true. All of a sudden, up ahead of me, I saw wheels flying and cars flipping, and when I got there, the gate was closed.
Collectively, I don't know really who is to blame. I don't think you're able to blame it on any one person, but they're all using very, very poor judgment. It's not very difficult to drive down a little straight piece of track here with a few cars around. There shouldn't be any trouble at all. We're supposed to be good drivers, and it's I don't think they have the judgment of a flea, for all I'm concerned.
Boy, I have this to say.
It was really ridiculous what happened, and just glad nobody got hurt real bad, and that's about all. I guess another year we'll have to wait. Right now I'm pulling for my team car that George Snyder drives, so maybe we can still bring in a victory.
This is Graham Hill.
That's the car that Graham won in last year?
Yes, right. This is his winning car.
Well, look, now, you were down, if I'm not mistaken, just a week or two ago for the time trials. I know you were, because you brought me some film back, and I used it on the sports show. It was who was the fellow who had this crash right in front of you?
Ralph LaGuardia.
Yeah, we have some film of Ralph LaGuardia right in front of you. Here this was the run just in front, wasn't it, Larry?
Yes, this was the warm-up laps. And it was a cloudy day, but this didn't dampen the spirits of anyone, because the big guns were to be attempting to qualify toward the end of the day. This is the turbine car driven by Parnelli Jones.
You know, I always had the idea that these fellas were out there all by themselves practicing, but they aren't. They've got dozens of people around them all the time, haven't they?
Yes, there's about 200,000 people there.
Is this going to be the crack up, or no? It's the one right after this, isn't it?
Right.
We should get a chance to. I noticed the wheel takes off. Here it comes. There he is, right in front of you, Larry. And there goes the wheel, and the spin. And if there'd been anybody with him, look at him. He just gets right up and walks away. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
You told me you just took the camera.
and, you know, held it up over your head because everybody was jumping up. Well, who's going to win it this year? I guess that's probably the question in the amount of time that we have left. Who do you figure?
Well, it's pretty hard to say.
There he is, the 1967 champion. No face at all. It could be Mario Andretti.
Could be.
Could be Graham Hill.
Graham will have a hard time. He's way in the back this year.
Is he way back there?
I believe so, yes.
Well, Andretti is seems to be the favorite. And, of course, everybody will be sitting with anticipation the beginning of the race, and we'll all know the end of the race. Larry, thank you, and have some 500 fever.
Thank you very much.
The preceding program was mechanically reproduced.